I'd like to call this meeting, special meeting in order. I'm going to dispense with the Pledge of Allegiance. We'll hold that for the regular meeting. Can you call roll, please?
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Steele? Not present. Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you. I'll dispense with public comment as there's no public in the room. At this point, we'll go into, I will disclose that we're going into closed session, and we will go into closed session. Legal?
District will adjourn in a closed session in accordance with the item listed on the agenda as D1.
Keeps them employed.
Right.
That's great.
Okay, I'd like to take us back into open session, Council.
No reportable action.
Thank you. At this time, the meeting is adjourned until 7 o'clock.
Yes.
I never do.
All right, let's get this done. I'd like to call this meeting in order. Thank you for coming. Would you please rise and join Kevin in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Steele? Listen. Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
Thank you very much. This brings us to public comment. At this time, during public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the board's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item at the time that item is called for discussion. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions will go through the board. We do have one yellow card, but I'm going to hold this because it is on the agenda, and so we will call this at the same time. Thank you. We have any presentations? Rick?
No.
No, thank you. Director's comments. Anything, Marianne?
No.
Bill?
No.
Kevin?
No.
Say no for Chris.
No,
no for me.
Okay.
Consent calendar. If there's nobody who wants anything pulled off of this, can I get a motion, please?
Make a motion.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, this brings us to a public hearing. At this time, I'd like to open the public hearing. And this is for the Town of Discovery Bay Ravenswood Landscape Zone 9 Park Lighting and Open Space Improvements District Assessments Report of the Fiscal Year 2014-15, Continued Collection of Assessments on County Tax Roll and Adoption of Resolution Number 2014-16. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item is before you now for the third time in the last couple of months. It was before you for the last meeting as well. The assessment for Ravenswood Zone 9 is an annual assessment. It's a Prop 218 assessment that is approved by the board subject to a public hearing, and that's what you are having this evening. The engineering report that was conducted by Herwood Engineering, they've conducted the report each year that we've had Zone 9 Ravenswood, recommends that the parcel assessment be set at $602.92 for the 14-15 fiscal year. That's the maximum allowable amount. The assessment for this current year was $563.94, so it went up about $35. It's recommended to go up about $35. Adoption of this resolution will assess the properties that new amount of $602.92, and if the board has any questions, I'm certain that Greg we can answer them, but essentially it's just due to just basic increased costs.
Before I take to the public, is there any board comment?
No.
Okay, this is a public hearing, so if there is any comment, I invite you to put your hand up and I'll call you up. We show that there is no public comment. At this time, we'll close public comment and we will close the hearing. At this time, we'll move to item. This is what I'm going to do in this case.
Mr. President, you actually need to take action. Then.
Oh, I'm sorry. We've got to
take action on the resolution.
Can I get a motion for this?
2014 only.
Second.
Thank you very much. Any discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. I forgot all about that. Okay, I'm going to, if it's okay with everybody, I'm going to move G, item 2, up to number 1. So we have a gentleman who would like to speak. And this time, I would like to call item 2, announcement of special district vacancy on LAFCO, call for nominations and for names for voting delegates. Election is July 21st, 2014. Staff.
Messed me up by moving that. Sorry. Mr. President, members of the board, this item was before you at the last meeting. As you will recall, the untimely passing of Dwight Meadows, who sat on the LAFCO board for a number of years, created this vacancy. There were originally five people that applied to be on the to replace Mr. Meadows. One of them has since fallen off, and the four other remaining members or candidates are listed before you on the agenda report this evening. They're Bob Amring from Bethel Island Municipal Improvement District, Stephen Anderson from the Moraga-Rinda Fire District, George Schmidt from the West County Wastewater District, and Igor Skaradov from the Contra Costa Resource Conservation District. Staff reached out to all four. We received information from three of them. And I'm not sure if Mr. Art Amring is in the audience this evening, but we did not have any written response from him as a result of those attempts to reach out to him. So at this point in time, it's appropriate for the board to go ahead and discuss who Director Pease will be voting for based upon this board's direction.
Okay, so at this time, let's call Mr. Skaradov up to speak. He was kind enough to come tonight.
Good evening. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Igor Skaradov. I'm the president of the board for the Resource Conservation District of Contra Costa County. And Dwight Meadows and I both were serving on that board for a number of years before he passed away, unfortunately, earlier this year. I'm here to ask for your support to fill that vacancy left by Dwight. I feel that the Resource Conservation District is very well placed to support the broad spectrum of special district interests in the county. Our boundaries of our special districts are the same as the county, so we cover the entire place, and we do a lot of work, say, in this particular area in the Delta. We've done quite a bit of work with agricultural interests here to improve efficiency of irrigation. We've been working with some sanitary districts to help find ways to reuse processed water as a way of conserving water. And we look very much forward to continuing our presence here as well as across the county. My own background is that I worked for 35 years as a chemist for Shell Oil Company. During that time, I did a lot of work with environmental issues, process safety, metallurgy, product quality, that sort of thing. Safety is a big part of all that. And also, there was a period when the refinery experienced a series of fairly large fires. During that time, I found myself wanting to join in and be part of the solution. So I did two things there. One of them, I participated coordinating a scientific effort to try to find out the cause of these fires, and we were ultimately successful in finding out that it was the salt that was left in the crude. And we got the company to invest millions of dollars in washing the crude more efficiently before putting in the refinery. So we reduced the corrosion and hence the fires. I haven't had any for a long time. That's a good thing. But while that was still going on, we still had some fires, and I joined the fire department. I worked as a fireman. I fought several of them myself. I was an instructor at the Reno Fire School, and a number of fire departments throughout the county have students of mine as part of the crew. I don't know exactly how much more I got. I haven't run for anything since elementary school. So what I produce for you is way too much information, probably. But if you'd be so kind as to perhaps take a look at it, I hope you'll find that my experience and my position and the location and the scope of my home district is suitable for your support.
We very much appreciate your coming. Do you have any questions? Marianne? Bill?
I just one question. What's your driving force to want to be on the left?
Well, I've been on the board for the Resource Conservation District for a little over 10 years now. And more recently, since I became president, I was also the representative of the Special Districts Association. And over this period of time, I've grown to appreciate how important it is to have up and down communications and coordination throughout the organization, and how important it is, say, through the Special Districts Association, to represent our district's interests to LAFCO. Now, there's two of us there. One of them is representing a sewer district, and we'll see who the other one will be. But I feel like my experience is not limited only to things that Resource Conservation District does, because I've worked a lot with sewer districts. I've worked a lot with the city of Martinez, so I'm familiar with municipal interactions. Worked for 35 years for a large company, and so I have some sense of business and how it interacts with the community. And we have on our board, in addition to Dwight from this part of the world, we have Tom Bloomfield, who is actually a Reclamation District representative of the Special Districts. And through him, I feel like I also have a good connection with this part of the county. And my driving force is I'd like to try to be the voice of the Special Districts to LAFCO. And to that extent, I offer to, if I'm elected, to come visit with you at any time. Would like to have a conversation about some particular issue that LAFCO has a bearing on your interests. I'd be very interested in taking part in the dialogue and finding out exactly what the story is so that I can represent you effectively. I propose to do that with other special districts as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, so at this point, we need to decide. Staff, Rick?
There are two other informational sheets that are there for you. One was included in the packet that went out. One came, I believe, after the packet was distributed, and I think it's on your table at this point in time. Now there's another one, Mr.
There's two in here.
Anderson, did that go out? Okay. I just don't recall when it came in. So it's up to the board at this point in time to make a recommendation and vote on who this board recommends represent them as a special district representative at LAFCO. And as you recall, at the last meeting, the board did direct Director Pease to carry that vote forward.
Sorry, what do you think?
Want to make a nomination? I'd like to nominate Steve Anderson for the job.
I really don't know any of
them. We need a second. You don't need a second for this, sir.
You don't. You just need a motion. You've got, I think what you did, Rick, and just correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm looking through the packet again, you've got resolutions attached, but you're just looking for a motion and a second and a unanimous or majority vote to direct Director Pease to cast his vote for a particular individual.
Any reason for this?
Well, I know the guy. Makes efforts to get out of the fire department. He's been concerned about what's going on here and the car on fire. He seems very proactive. I don't know personally, I just know that he's very active in what he does. So I would just, I'd make a nomination to be for Stephen Anderson.
Your motion would be for Stephen Anderson.
Right.
At this time, we vote on or take another motion?
Need a second.
Need a second.
Is there a second? No second.
Dies for lack of a second. So now you need another motion.
I'd nominate Mr. Skardoff.
Do you have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
So just three ayes, one nay, and Director Pease will be voting for Mr. Skardoff. Thank you. Okay, let's go back to item one, which is the review of the draft fiscal year 2014-15 Town of Discovery Bay Community Service capacity fees. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. As you will recall, Marianne was on the board at the time. And I'm not sure Bill was either.
But back in
November of 2012, this board adopted, conducted a public hearing and adopted capacity fee charges for new water and wastewater connections. Those fees had not been updated since, I believe, 2004, prior to that time. There wasn't a lot of building that was going on. There wasn't a lot of new construction taking place. And with the master plans that we completed on the water side and the wastewater side, it was important that we update those capacity fees at that time. Due to the recent work that's been taking place, some of the projects are complete. We have projects that are under construction, and we have projects that are out to bid, and we know what those prices are. We've gone ahead and moved forward with an updated capacity fee study, but it's also important to note that this also includes those two big projects that are included as part of the Regional Water Quality Control Board requirements, the denitrification project, as well as the filtration. And it also includes a future replacement well for well 5. As we know, we're having issues with that, so we put well 8 into the planning horizon, and that's included on the water side. Recommendation is to have the capacity fees set at $4,700 for water. They're currently at $3,900, and for $11,930 for wastewater, and they're currently at $9,860. And for a total of $16,630. Barna Wells conducted the study with a lot of input from Gregory Harris, with Herwood Engineering, myself, as well as John Fawcett with Ludorf and Scalmanini. This agenda packet went out on Friday without the attachment. As you know, it came in, it was distributed on Monday as additional materials and with the revised agenda packet. Those developers that are doing business in town at this time, including Hoffman, Kuiper Homes, Pantages, Newport Point, were all notified of this meeting. In fact, two of them are here this evening. I don't see Mark. And so they've all been notified of it. Allison Lehovitz, I always mess that up, I'm sorry, Allison, is here from Barter Wells and want to be able to go through the capacity fee study and what changes and what took place. And so she's going to go ahead and get up and do that. I'm going to get the PowerPoint going.
Rick, I go to G11 on my computer and I don't get it.
And it's not linked. It's page 23. It's page 23. It's not linked. The bookmark's not linked.
Page. I don't have a page 23. I go from 21 to 39.
Well,
it's not there.
Carol sent out a revised.
I've got the revised one open. And it's not doing anything.
I've got 23.
I wonder if you need to reload the agenda packet.
Rick, is this going to require another public hearing?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. This will be coming back to the board for, this is just a draft document. It's scheduled to be noticed per the requirements in the newspaper for 30 days in advance. So that will be taking place later this week, and it's scheduled to come back to the board on the 20th of August for final adoption.
Okay, thank you. Hi.
So I'm Allison Lehovitz with the firm Bartle Wells Associates. We are the firm who worked on the 2012 capacity fee study, so this is an update with the updated costs that Rick mentioned. So I have about a 15-minute presentation. I'll go over what a capacity fee is and our methodology for calculating the new fee, and then end with a fee survey. So a capacity fee is a fee for new customers to connect into the town's water and sewer system. It does not affect the current residents at all. It's only for new development. There's two elements to the fee. There's a buy-in to the existing facilities. The town and developers have put in a huge amount of infrastructure, so new customers need to pay their fair share for what's already in the ground. And there is a need to expand some facilities to serve new development, such as extend pipelines out to new areas. So new development connecting should pay a fair share of expansion of facilities too. So those are the two main elements that we looked at in the study. We worked with the town's engineers to develop an estimate of the future customers. So these future customers are the folks who are going to pay the capacity fees. We looked at who the existing residents are. The town also has committed capacity for developers who have already contributed significant facilities and who are owed credits for those facilities. That's the committed capacity. And then, as you can see, there's the future customers. So those are the folks who are paying the fee. And then your build out year is 2020. So that's when the town is fully built out and is at its full capacity. And this chart shows the capacity is EDUs, that's equivalent dwelling units, and that's a single family home. The water and sewer usage of a single family home. So I conducted a evaluation of the water and sewer system, and the water system is worth about $9.6 million, and the wastewater system is considerably more valuable. And I allocated the value of the system across the build-out capacity. So the idea is that new customers and existing customers all share in those facilities. And it comes out to a cost of about $1,150 for the water system and $3,960 for the wastewater system. In addition, the water system needs to be expanded to serve new development. We worked with the town's engineers to determine what capital improvement projects are needed to serve growth. And we divided by the number of future customers to get a cost per customer. And so that was $3,550. We also looked at the wastewater system. So the wastewater system capital improvements, we worked with the town's engineer and developed a capital improvement cost of about $7 million that is attributable to future customers. That's their fair share of facilities that needed to be upsized. And we calculated a fee of $5,750. Now, this chart shows only general wastewater facilities. The town also has a need to add effluent filtration and denitrification facilities. And those are significantly expensive. Now, we allocated those costs to both committed capacity and future customers. Your committed capacity development represents capacity at the town's current treatment level. Committed capacity did not pay for additional advanced treatment. So to make committed capacity equal to the investment that all other customers are going to have to pay, committed capacity needs to pay its fair share of advanced treatment. So the advanced treatment portion of the fee was $2,220 per single family home. So that was a lot of numbers. This chart summarizes the buy-in portion of the fees. So that's the buy-in to the existing system, and the expansion portion of the fees. That's the portion that's needed to serve growth by expanding the system. And the total calculated fee is the $16,630. The water portion of the fee is the $4,700. The general wastewater facilities are $9,710. The advanced treatment portion is $2,220. So it's a total fee of $16,630. And although that's a significant connection fee, we did a very comprehensive survey of other agencies and found that Discovery Bay is very comparable to both East Bay agencies and Tri-Valley agencies. And I even looked at Sacramento and Stockton. And those two cities also have permit requirements for advanced treatment, same as Discovery Bay. But I highly suspect that they're keeping their fees artificially low. And what that means is for those cities, their existing ratepayers would have to pay higher sewer bills to cover the difference in cost. So we calculated a fair way to allocate costs to future customers connecting to the system, and your fees are very comparable to your neighbors. And then you can see on the right side of the chart, the water fees, that's the blue portion, get very, very high. And those are the Dublin San Ramon Services District cities, and Contra Costa Water District has very, very high water supply fees for new development. That concludes our presentation.
There's a, the, before you ask any questions, the there's a separate table, and I believe it's on page 13 of this, of the study, not of the electronic report, but of the study, that has the committed capacity, essentially the Hoffman committed capacity, and their fees are a little bit different, but they're broken down very clearly on that sheet, and it explains it. So their fees are a little bit less than what new development would bring in that's not committed. And so just wanted to bring that information to the board. It's on page 14, table 15, page 14.
Any board comment? Kevin?
Hold on a second. I'm looking at this. Really?
I can't find it.
Page 37 of the electronic packet.
For you to say.
Oh, right. So we're looking at this. No, go ahead. Someone else said that.
Chris? Bill?
Yeah. Really understandable how you did the math. I did the percentage, and it's about a 20% increase, which kind of sat me back in the chair a little bit. So I was going to ask the question, but you answered it with the data. So it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, so this version of the study, this update from 2012, incorporates the latest capital improvement costs, which includes a lot of actual bid prices. This is what it costs to make these significant investments in your infrastructure.
Yeah, what, being we did a study in 2012, and now we've had some new requirements placed upon us and some new developments coming in. From this point forward, I don't know whether you or your staff, is there any, when would you anticipate another revision of these fees?
Greg and I discussed this, and you might want to address that, but based on the next five-year permit.
Yes, the biggest thing that affected us, we did the master plan 2 years ago, which identified facility deficiencies in physical facilities and our planning horizon, and created projects to service those. And then the second biggest item is your permit, and do they change things? Well, this permit's been the most significant change in a permit that we've had since I've been here. So that's like, unfortunately, 15 years or something. So in 15 years, this is the most significant permit we've seen in terms of cost burden added to the district. So at least for the next 5 years, our permit doesn't change. And our master plan, normally you do a master plan update every 10 years. So our master plan and our permit would be normally consistent for the next 5 years. And if you look at it, even this permit picked out these projects into the next permit. So they kind of spread them into this permit, next permit. So I don't think our permit is going to change. There's nothing we have to build. We've built every technology there is when we're done with this. So, I mean, it's going to have to be something new. So I don't see a lot of changes in the next 5 years. So
that's on the wastewater side.
Yeah, on the wastewater side.
On the water side, as you know, we have new rules that we're running into now with respect to the drought, and where that goes, if we head into a fourth year or not. It's looking like the prognosticators are indicating that it will. It just depends on what happens, what requirements might come down from the state on that with respect to charges and fees and facilities, and whether or not, you know, our infrastructure continues to maintain itself, if you will. If we had another well to go to that went down, that could impact it. But we do have well 8 planned in this forecast, so it's kind of a roll the dice at this point.
Normally you do it every 5 years.
Right.
You do it every 5 years, but then if something important happened, you'd want to make sure that got updated, and you wouldn't.
Right. So on this, 5 years from now, in our next permit, we have to add the, what's that second thing they had to do? ionization.
Oh, the nitrogen removal is in this plan.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what we're saying.
Right. Yeah. So right now it picks up everything in the permit going forward. Normally, unless some other event happens, like the drought gets worse or some other outside influence comes in,
wastewater is pretty well handled for the next.
You would go 5 years, and then you would just check in.
Right,
you know,
review it,
right,
do whatever,
exactly.
But no anticipated additional unforeseen costs on wastewater because we've got that permit later.
Right, you know.
For the additional.
But like, here's a good example. The drought gets worse, and they mandate agencies with sewer systems, you know, distribute tertiary treated water to the community. You know, they can make a mandate. You know, well, then you'd have to build pipeline systems, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, there could be some outside influence, in which case you revisit then. If there's a big cost increase that comes to the district, you want to revisit. Otherwise, you'd go 5 years.
The other thing also is, as you get in the next 5-6 years, we're going to be pretty close to build out. I mean, if Pantages builds, if the other, there's not that many lots left to talk about. So.
You know, unless someone decides to annex in or, you know, there's something.
Quite an incentive to start building.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
If they slow down and they haven't built yet, then you would update their costs on that.
As long as permits have been taken out between now and the next 5 years, these fees would remain constant.
They would remain until you update the capacity fee study again. That's correct.
Right. So we've got a 5-year window with knowing exactly what their costs are.
Right. That's right. You know,
unless there was something that.
Pending some outside influence that prompted the district to update it. That's correct.
Right. Thanks, Rick. Any other questions? All right.
Okay.
Any public comment?
Mark Armstrong, Pantages Bays. I've followed this process over the last several months and read through the report. Fees are expensive. They've gone up. I understand the rationale behind it. I think you can make an argument why the new development share should be less, but there is a logic to what's been proposed. The new development share has gone up compared to what it was with respect to, for example, the tertiary filtration than it was before, but I understand the rationale. It's a thorough report, and I just wish the fees were lower.
I'm with you.
Expensive to develop.
Yeah.
I think the fees do go up on a potentially an annual basis with cost of living engineering index. These are set.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Mark. We will definitely look into that.
and
resolve that before August 20th.
Well, thanks.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Thank you very much for your presentation. Okay, at this point, there's no action to be taken?
Just that we're going to be directing. Just to receive the comments and set the public hearing for August 20th.
Okay. All right, let's move to item 3, the award of contract to Do All Safety LLC in the amount of $36,000 to provide safety support services and staff training for the period July 1, 2014 through June 30, 2015. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. As you recall, as part of the budget discussion, we added in a line item under contractual services in the amount of $36,000 to Do All Safety, or Do All Safety, to conduct a fairly extensive safety training program for us. We have not had one at the district for a number, we've never had a formal training program. And there are a number of items when you read through the packet that are required whether it be through Cal OSHA or through the state of California that we must comply with, and each year they get stricter and stricter. Do All is a company that works primarily with public agencies, mostly smaller agencies. Some of the bigger cities and agencies have their own programs in place. This company comes in and fills the void. They are throughout the entire Bay Area. We met with them this morning, actually. And one of the questions that I had is, a year from now, moving forward, this is an annual program going forward. The first year is labor intensive in the sense that all the programs need to be set up and established, and there's a monthly training program, and the injury and illness prevention plan has got to be put in place. And this board is going to be inundated over the next year with a number of policies and procedures as it relates to this. The goal is to make sure that employees don't get injured on the job, that we don't injure the public as a result of maybe equipment that needs to be inspected or things like that, but also to make sure that our workers' comp costs can drop. We've had some claims over the last couple of years that have been fairly significant. So that was the reason why we brought the program forward. We recommend approval of it. Next year, indicated that it would probably be about 50% of this year once the program is up and running. So this year, like I said, is an expensive year, but next year should be about half of that. So if you have any questions, we can go ahead and answer them.
Any questions from the board?
No. This impacts all employees in the town?
It impacts everybody, yes.
Is there any chance of partnering up with another municipality to cut the cost of this like we do with our other board training?
We could next year more so than we can this year because we don't have the policies and procedures in place, and they're all customized to each location. If you go through the packet, you'll see they did an assessment. We brought them out to do an assessment for us back in, I want to say, March time frame, and they came back with a full-on report, and it's part of the attachment of the package this evening. And in that, there are very, very site-specific requirements that need to take place. And moving forward, we discuss, they do work with the city of Brentwood, for example. So the possibility of sending our staff to meetings in Brentwood or their coming here is certainly a possibility, but more than likely not really this year.
I think the only other question I really have is, we have, two workman comp claims last year, I think?
We had, over the last 4 years, we've had 5 workers' comp claims that have been really expensive. The insurance has covered them. And what that does is there's a factor, it's called an EMOD factor, and our EMOD is almost 3, which is 3 times the average, and it's a very high number. Now, some of those are going to be falling off this year as they're on a 3-year roll, kind of like speeding tickets or moving violations would be. They fall off after the 3rd year. So once they start to fall off, our workers' comp rate should start to drop. I did discuss this with SDRMA back when I was at a conference recently. I spent a considerable amount of time discussing it with their risk management guy, Dennis Timoney, and he was very supportive of what we were doing, knows the challenges that we have, that we've been facing, and so recommended it that we move forward with that. And I know I talked to Bernie, and Bernie has some things too. He's got a very solid safety program in place but it's a little bit different than what we do, and we do tag on to some of their tailgate meetings and that sort of thing on occasion. And so we can even look to do that more, but we do need to get the first year in place first.
Okay. How much time per employee is this going to take next year to implement this? Is there a number of hours of training that we can expect for each employee? Or?
Yeah, he means for the coming year.
Turn to page 97 of the electronic version of your report.
Okay.
This was when we had them do our assessment, so the ignore the dates. We actually got an updated one today.
Okay.
But this goes through and discusses the programs, the type of safety, and the type of classwork that'll be taking place. And we're basically cutting off a section each month. Or a couple of sections each month, and there's a page just before that, and there's a matrix. It's on page 95. And in the matrix at the top, it tells you who needs to take what type of classes based upon what their specific work environment is. So for example, I wouldn't necessarily have Aaron Goldsworthy, who works on the water side of the house, take training on lawnmower safety. So that just depends on what the employee's role is. But it will be it's going to be a labor intensive for a year. The company maintains all records, all OSHA records. They keep everything. They're an extension of our staff, and it's just an opportunity for us to do a better job in terms of being able to provide a safe work environment for our employees.
So will we manage this program after implementation, or are we an ongoing,
manage the program. We'll have an ongoing contract. We will manage the program. We have a safety coordinator, one person who is designated as the safety coordinator for the district, and that's Sue Heinle. For those of you that know Sue, you know that she'll do a good job in that role. She's very task-oriented, and so she will be, and when she gives us direction, we take direction from her when it comes to the safety meetings.
There's a handwritten note on the page that I have. It says about 20 hours per month. Is that an indication that the total hours of all employees would be about 20 hours a month, or is that 20 hours a month per employee?
No, it's not per employee. Okay. That was my note. It was approximate 20 hours total time sitting
for
whether you're sitting in this room taking a class or on site getting training on a piece of equipment or taking a webinar that they offer.
All employees, all inclusive.
It's a 360, yes.
Right, about 20 hours.
And this will not be as an overtime?
No.
On site?
It's all on site. Now, one of the things we discussed today, and alludes to President Simon's comment, is if we had a new employee, for example, we'd already had the training. They've got webinars that they host that they've got on their site, and they also have, they've got Brentwood, they've got Stockton as clients, so they've got clients all around. So if there's a class that somebody missed, maybe they were ill for the day, they couldn't make it, they were sick, and so they can go take the class somewhere else. They can arrange for it to go somewhere else. Preferably, it's all on site, though. Everything's done here. They come to us. They're based out of Fremont, so they come to us.
In your discussion with SDRMA, did they indicate that our overall liability policies or anything could come down because of our training?
No, it has to do with your workers' comp factor and number of claims. It's just a straight mathematical process from there. So just the fact that we're offering this type of program, we're doing it, we have to do something. We are required by law to do something. And we've been getting by, but we haven't really been hitting A to Z, and this takes us A to Z.
So the majority of all this safety is work-related, which is workers' comp.
Yeah, it's blood. Bloodborne pathogen. You don't think about bloodborne pathogens, but the number one, besides first responders, the number one recipients of being injured or being come in contact with bloodborne pathogens are park and maintenance workers. When they're in the field and they're with their hand, pick something up and there's a needle there. It happens. So they are in that same category. They need to be trained properly.
Right. Any other questions for the board? Public comment? All right, so you need a motion for this?
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. All right. Information. We have no informational items. Veolia. How are you, Bernie?
Good. How are you?
Thank you.
Thank you. As we move forward here for the month of June, we continue our safe practices because things that Rick talked about, we practice on a daily basis, and it is a good program to have. We got our regulatory reports sent in on time. Side, we produced over 135 million gallons of water last month. Our chemical, you'll see our chemical dosage is high due to high demand, so more chemicals we use. And as you can see on the chart there, as we're in the summer months, our water production is continuing to go up. On the wastewater side,
ask a question, because it came up in the state's new water conservation thing, comparing last year usage to this year usage. Did I see that on there?
This is just this month's date. Me and Rick had talked about that, and that's information I'll be gathering and getting it to him, so we can have some comparison of that.
It says 2013 water production table. We're in 2014.
2014 online.
I don't know, I'm just looking at the screen.
Oh, yeah. So this is 14 then, so we need to change that chart. This is for 14.
So it is 14. Yeah, that is 14. That's what caught me when I saw it. I said, well, we've got that. I'd like to know what 14 is.
So I'll make that change. Thank you for showing it. Yep.
All right.
This is year to date from January on for this year, but as we move forward, we can provide back data if you'd like to see it.
All right.
We continue to meet all our parameters in the wastewater side. You can see we're well below our limits. We did have one excursion last month on SSO with Lift Station F construction. They had a water main break at the school, flooded the manhole, ran out, clear water. We was able to respond really quickly on it. We had it cleaned up in no time, but we did lose about 50 gallons of just fresh water. Collection, I have a meeting scheduled next at the end of this month to get ready for our schedule for our TVN and our flushing program. We're going to try to, as I mentioned in the past, cut a setup. We have a fall schedule and a spring schedule, so we're not trying to do everything at one time. So hopefully the next board meeting I'll have more information on our schedule for the flushing and TVN. The rehab of Lift Station F did start last month and is completed now. There are some control issues we're working through now, but the lift station is online and, as speaking, is running fairly well. And then we continue the maintenance program, working on key items that come up on water and the wastewater side. Here on this chart, the biggest thing is that you'll notice on our backlog is starting to drop. We've been hitting some of those 30-plus day POs, equipment's coming in, parts have been coming in, and we're getting those down where we only have 11 work orders that are over 30 days. We've been working on those pretty hard. So overall, we're getting the backlog down. We did have 19 call-outs last month. Most of them were due to water pressure issues, fluctuation in the pressure. And we think we got that issue resolved, but we keep maintaining that and watching it. So that's about it.
Thank you. Any questions?
Bernie?
Yes, sir.
Or Virgil, one of you two, how long does it take for that painting project to be? How long does it take for that painting project to be completed?
Which project?
Lift Station F.
All the equipment out in the street out there.
Tomorrow.
No, I talked to Greg about it yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Greg explained it to me. They are prepping this week, and they're doing some of the painting, but they won't be completed until probably.
They
late
still
next
need
week
to sandblast tub and
that stuff. Sandblasting, yeah.
Okay.
Are they still ahead of schedule? I noticed they're not there forever.
Yeah, in fact, they were so ahead of schedule, the painter was, that's why nothing happened last week.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Any public comment? Bernie, thank you. Okay. Moving right along. General Manager's report.
Thank you. I've asked Bernie to stay for this as well. As you know, the governor back in January declared a drought emergency. On April the 25th, he called on everybody in California, pretty much, to conserve water, 20% voluntary. And on June 4th, this board adopted a resolution implementing a voluntary 20% water reduction. On July the 9th, last Thursday, we received notice from the State Water Resources Control Board. We'll be considering temporary drought emergency measures at their meeting that took place yesterday. In that meeting, in that 9-hour meeting that took place, they did adopt a number of items, and there's a summary before you that Rod provided to me earlier today that I provided to you. But essentially, water is, residents need to conserve water. They can't water their lawns more than twice a week. They can't hose down driveways. They can't have fountains going that don't have recirculating water, which impacts our Ravenswood splash pad. If there are violations, there's up to $500 fines per user, per resident. And if we don't comply, follow through, there's $10,000 a day put penalties to the district. As Director Peace noted, that we have to, starting in October, provide a monthly usage report comparing our monthly usage from last year to this year, month to month. And if you remember back in January or early February, or it was early February, we had the workshop. 2011, we used 1.183 billion gallons, and 2012, 1.218, 3% increase, and in 2013, 1.285, 5% increase. So I asked Bernie this afternoon, and he was out of the office and wasn't able to get back, to be able to provide that information so we could go compare month to month from last year to this year to see how we're doing. This is all brand new. Everybody's still dissecting it. We're not sure exactly what our responsibility is. They say anybody that is in the business and enforcing rules can make fines. If we don't have that,
it's PCA 32.
We don't have general police powers, so I'm not sure how we're going to be able to comply with that. They're thinking that the police and fire departments are going to be able to do it. I'm not sure how that's going to work. So we're just going to have to develop, see what other agencies are doing and how it's going to affect us as this starts to bed out a little bit more. So I just wanted to bring it to your attention. That's what's happening in that area. And
Rick, if you have any input. I think one of the problems you're going to have, we're making comparisons to 2011. You're in the middle of a recession. You had a considerable amount of foreclosed homes, empty homes, people not living here, not spending a dime, and the economy starting to recover. And if you look at the increase between when it was horrible to when it's fairly decent, it's not that big of an increase.
Well, they're only requiring us to look at this 2013 versus 2014. And I believe it's a 10-month emergency that could be extended depending on what happens next year with water and rain.
Can we get some kind of direction for them about how we're supposed to police this?
I don't think they've figured it all out yet. Okay. Their information sheet that they have, their fact sheet, that's attached to the report, as well as the information sheet that Rod's office provided to me this afternoon, are as much as we have at this point in time. It just came down yesterday afternoon. We had an idea what it was going to be, but we don't know how it's going to impact us from an operational standpoint.
We've got several agencies that are being hit with this that we represent. We're on top of it. We'll have the recommendation. You've got 30 days to act, so something's going to, an ordinance or a resolution or something.
That's not happening in 30 days. And it doesn't go into effect until August 1st.
We have a tally by month of the new homes that are coming online each month so we can subtract those out or keep those in or so that we can compare the same number of homes this year versus the same number of homes in the future, because if you've got new homes, we're going to use more water.
I don't know what how the state's going to do that. We're going to find out.
They may stop building.
Yeah, they're actually asking for two things, and this is why they got the emergency order, is because although the governor asked for a 20% reduction, with the new increase in homes, they got a 4% increase as a result of it. So the state struggled with it a bit. So they're asking for two reporting requirements. The first reporting requirement is a per user. So you're actually comparing apples to apples. How many users did you have in one time? How many users did you have in the second time? But the overall goal is to have a reduction, even with the population increase.
Do do you think the feeling from them that they may start a moratorium on building at this point?
No. The biggest problem, one of the biggest problems we see with this, and it's going to affect Kuiper development out there right now, is the fact that watering twice a day, and people are putting new grass out there, and you've got to water twice a week. I mean, and you got to water twice, three times a day.
That's what I'm saying.
With new landscaping, and so their new customers and their new residents, our new residents that have bought new homes from them, are going to be impacted by this, and so it's going to cause some. There's going to be some growing pains with this.
I believe you're going to see new standards in terms of landscaping for new development.
The fact that many homes here are not metered, I mean, how are you going to really know who's abusing and who's not, since people that don't have meters?
We can, the homes that are metered, we know which home, we know the metered homes. The homes, we know who all of our irrigation, our commercial users are. And everybody that's left over are the non-metered homes. So we know what volume that is. There's a mathematical equation that will tell us that. Specifically, we don't have the ability to go out and look online to see if someone's using too much water. It's only going to be by a visual sight. We can tell if someone's watering. And Virgil, over the number of years that developed door hangers, we were talking about it yesterday, that when our crews are out in the field, and if they see something, they can go drop a door hanger in somebody's yard or on somebody's front door, give them information, educate them. We'll put it out certainly in our next issue of the pipeline. I believe it's being covered in this week's Discovery Bay Press, because I spoke with one of the reporters yesterday. So with that, we're going to try and get the word out. It's a valid question, but that's going to be a lot harder to tackle.
I think awareness more than anything else is what it's going to be. I mean, if people don't see a problem, you know, they do it, it doesn't affect me, it affects the guy across the street, not me. I still see people washing their cars every day and hosing stuff off and hosing their docks off out in the back. And they don't know.
You can wash your car, you just have to have a self-closing nozzle, but you can't wash docks off. In fact, we got a call about that today, someone who's in the dock cleaning business, and it affects that person as well.
Okay, any other questions?
I thought our splash pad was recirculated water.
Public comment? Okay, Rick, anything else from him?
Nope.
Hang on, we do have public comment. Come on.
I'm here in my capacity from the Resource Conservation District. We're not regulatory, so we can't help you with the enforcement aspect of it at all. In fact, that we consider that to be our major strong point. That people don't have to worry about us coming down the driveway. But we do have resources that we can offer to help with this kind of issue. One of the biggest consumers of water typically is landscaping, and there are strategies and techniques, both in the application of the water and the selection of the plants, that can reduce the water usage quite a bit. And we can do workshops and instructional materials and so on to help with that. We have done, with agriculture, we've done some projects using irrigation technology to reduce the amount of water that's used to raise tomatoes by quite a bit. It reduced the water usage to half, increased the yield, and reduced the runoff to virtually zero. So there are things that can be done to kind of get around this rather than just beating people upside the head. And we offer the help to do that, not the beating upside the head part. We also have a service which I don't know if everybody knows about, but we maintain what they call a CIMIS station in this part of the county, the California Irrigation Management System Station, which monitors the behavior of water as it's applied to irrigation surfaces. So it monitors how the water penetrates the ground, how fast it evaporates, and it's used, it's on the internet, it's accessed on the internet, and very many irrigation managers do use the data from that to use scientific data to help them to manage their irrigation frequency and duration. So I invite you to make use of these resources and certainly reading my card.
If you give that to Steph, that'd be great.
We get those alerts every day, trust me.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
So, any other comments? Okay, District Legal.
Nothing to report. It's always a pleasure to be here, and it'll only be a pleasure if I get home on Highway 4.
What time do you think you'd like to get out of here?
Now?
Any committee updates? There's no correspondence. Public record request nothing. Any future agenda items? Marianne?
No, thank
Bill?
You.
No. Kevin? Chris? None for me. And at that point, thank you for coming. You're adjourned.